Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, together with Greta Anderson.
Hi, Ursula.
Hi, Greta, and welcome to you, the listener. Sometimes we start our Local Talk show with phenology updates. Phenology is the tracking of natural events for animals and plants as they occur within our calendar year. Today, we take note of the arrival of what has become an annual event that happens in Iowa, but has worldwide attention and importance. It may still look and feel like the dead of winter, but the Decorah eagles have laid 3 eggs. You may know the Decorah eagles, a mated pair of bald eagles who have built several nests near a fish hatchery in Decorah, Iowa. They have become internationally famous because it's possible to watch them up close via webcam every year while they are raising their young. Over the years, they've raised 20 eaglets to adolescence. They're very successful birds, and this past week, the eggs were laid again on schedule. The first egg was on Wednesday, February, this last Wednesday. The second egg was last Saturday, and the third egg, no, the first egg was the Wednesday before last. The second egg was on Saturday, the 21st, and the third egg was on Wednesday, the 25th, at around 7 p.m. Incubation period for an eagle egg is about 35 days. We have a link to the webcam on our webpage, which we post with the show later in the day if you want to look at the webcam or just Google Decorah eagles. That's the best way to find it as well.
Well, according to Orlin Love of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and this information was reprinted in the Ames Tribune, this year's egg laying was not so simple. A power struggle for ownership of the nest had to be resolved first. And, of course, the eagles won. For the past several weeks, a pair of great horned owls has challenged the eagles for occupancy of the nest. Sometimes the two species have even come to blows. I guess the eagles finally evicted their unruly tenants. Homes and tenants in Ames are a subject for later in the show today. I recorded an interview this week with State Representative Chip Baltimore, who has introduced a bill into the Iowa legislature that would challenge zoning in Ames that restricts the use of houses to no more than 3 unrelated people. Ames Mayor Ann Campbell will be able to join us here in the studio to respond to this proposed bill.
Before we get to that, we'd first like to welcome Melissa Spencer.
Good morning.
Good morning to the Local Talk show. Melissa is a deputy coordinator for Story County Emergency Management, and she has agreed to join us and talk to us about Story County's new mass notification system for alerting us to emergencies. You can get critical messages on your cell phone and by email. And through the service, and currently Story County is transitioning to a new system for doing this, scheduled to go into effect March 1st. Thank you for coming, Melissa, and to tell us about what this service is and the change that's happening. Tell us, first of all, what the system does. What exactly is the service, and what kind of alerts are you really offering through the service?
What the system does is it allows us to send messages throughout the entire county via home phones if people still have landlines. It also allows us to send it through email and through text messages if people have gone to the website and registered their cell phone and text messages. And the system is designed to send messages out only in emergencies for things such as evacuation orders or snow ordinance or things like boil orders for a community. So the number of activations per year will actually be very low.
Of course, the thing that always comes to my mind, or comes to mind in Iowa with emergencies, tornadoes. Does the CERT alert system alert you to tornadoes?
This system we will not use for severe weather notification. We have found that there is a little bit of time that it does take to call all of the phone numbers that are registered. And our biggest concern for the safety of the people of Story County is that it will not allow for enough time mm-hmm. for people to seek shelter appropriately. So we will not be using it for any severe weather notifications.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now the system you had before was called Code Red?
Correct.
And it was a system that was, as I understand, paid for by the county.
Correct.
And Now you're turning over to something called the Story County Iowa Alert System, mm-hmm. which is through Homeland Security, which means it's state paid. Is that correct?
Correct. The Iowa's Homeland Security Division decided that there needed to be a system available to every county statewide that was a system that would be similar across the entire state. And with approval from the governor, they have received funding to pay for this for any county that would like to participate. And so right now there is no cost to Story County to access the Story County Iowa Alert System, where with the Code Red system previously, we were paying with local funds.
So is that the reason why this is changing over, or what prompted the conversion to this new system?
That is one reason that there is no cost to the local level is one reason. There are some expanded capabilities with this system.
Can you explain?
Yeah, the messages to the text messages to the phones and being able to register emails is something that's new. And also for people to register and self-identify special needs. We have a section on the page. If somebody has a hearing impairment or vision impairment or is on an oxygen machine at home, if we know those folks are out there, we will try to make sure that we pay special attention to that segment of the population in time of emergency or disaster. Mm-hmm. That's something new that was not on the previous system.
So you see this as really an improvement to what was...
Yeah, I think it is an improvement because it allows people to register up to 5 cell phones and up to 2 email addresses per register. You also can select as many communities as you would like to receive messages from. Messages will go out to the county as a whole, but we've allowed the jurisdictions to send emergency messages just to their communities, which is something that we've not had before. And we also have the ability for schools to enroll. We have 3 schools currently, Colonesco, Collins Maxwell, and Roland Story, that have elected to use this as an emergency notification system for any school-related emergencies. And other community schools have the option to come onto the system, but have not at this time simply to the fact that they have their own notification system. But it's an option that if they would like to come on in the future, they're certainly more than welcome to.
Mm-hmm. And this is a service that individuals can receive as well through, like you said, emails, cell phones. How do you tell us about the process of registering for this?
It's actually a really easy process. There's a couple ways you can register. You can go to the Story County webpage at www.storycountyiowa.gov. And if you scroll down the page just a little bit, there's a big red box that says register for alerts. They can click on that. And it will take them to the page with the link. And it's just really straightforward, top to bottom, that to register. Mm-hmm. And also they can go to, if you're a Facebook follower of ours, if you just go to facebook.com, Story County Emergency Management, we have a sign up link there as well. And if anybody ever has any issues with signing up, they certainly can contact Story County Emergency Management and we will help them through the process. But it's pretty intuitive, pretty straightforward for folks to get signed up.
Now, when we spoke earlier, you mentioned the issue of security and use of information that's provided through the website. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have had some folks call in that have had concerns about, will their email and phone numbers be protected? And the company that actually manages the software for us, Inspiron, guarantees the safety of your information. Your emails and phone numbers will never be given to a third party and will be all kept strictly confidential. So there's no risk that your information will be shared with anyone.
You're a government agency, correct? You're really a function of the county?
Actually, we are a function of a commission. We are defined by Iowa code that we answer to a commission, which is actually made up of the mayors or jurisdictional executives for every community, plus one representative from the Board of Supervisors and the sheriff. And those are our bosses that our office answers to. A lot of people believe we're a county entity because we are housed in the county building, and we're eternally grateful to the Board of Supervisors in the county for letting us use their space. But we actually answer to a commission, which allows us to be accountable to the county as a whole, the same no matter the size of the community, which is very beneficial when it comes to emergency response.
So are you a nonprofit organization, or what are you actually?
We're not a nonprofit organization. organization. Our commission actually determines our budget, mm-hmm. and then we're funded. We're actually funded through the general supplemental fund of the county. We don't mm-hmm. come out of the general fund. Mm-hmm. So once our commission establishes our budget, then the county approves that. But we adopt all of the policies and procedures of the county, and that's sometimes where people can become confused that. Well, are you a county entity? But we respond to a commission, much like conservation and like the assessors.
And then do you respond to emergencies beyond alerting people? You're involved with management of emergencies?
Yes. We're responsible for the county's emergency operations plan, which is 15 different pieces of how the county will respond, how the county as a whole will respond to a disaster. A good example of some of the things we did, the apartment fire in Nevada last week. Uh-huh. We assisted the local fire department with managing the folks that needed assistance from Red Cross, and we bring that in. Mm-hmm. A big part of our responsibility is coordinating resources that we need to bring in beyond the county level. That's a large part of what we do. We will come anytime a fire department or a first responder agency or a community needs us. We will respond to deliver what help we can.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in. And just repeat again, if you would, where people can go to get the service and exactly what they'll get if they register on the website.
Yeah, it's Story County Iowa Alerts, and they can go to the Story County webpage at www.storycountyiowa.gov. And there's a big red box at the bottom of the page they can click. And when they register, they will get notifications to their cell phones, whether it be text or voice. And they can also get messages to their email. They can select as many communities as they would like to receive messages from, and also if they have a school that they would like to receive messages from as well. And if they have any problems, they can feel free to give Story County Emergency Management a call, and we'll walk you through the registration process.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Melissa Spencer from Story County Emergency, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Where's his Sunday best? Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around. Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our house, it has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our house.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Greta Anderson here with Ursula Rudenberg. We are your co-hosts for today.
The Honorable Mayor Ann Campbell has joined us, and we want to talk about housing in Ames for the next few minutes on the show.
Welcome, Ann.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. A new bill, House Study Bill 25, was introduced by Iowa House Representative Chip Baltimore, a Republican from Boone, that challenged Ames zoning that restricts the use of dwellings to no more than three unrelated people residing in a house in residential and urban core medium residential zones. I interviewed Representative Baltimore in his bank office last Saturday to find out why he had introduced this bill, and we will listen to that audio in a moment.
Mayor Ann Campbell went to Des Moines on Tuesday to speak against the House Bill number 9. Thank you, Mayor, for joining us here on KHOI.
Thank you.
So before we listen to the interview with Chip Baltimore, would you summarize what your message was when you went to speak with legislators in Des Moines this past Tuesday?
Well, I'd certainly be happy to. This is a subject that has come up a number of times in the last few years, and this year apparently it has more legs than it has had previously. Ames, a number of years ago, recognized that there were single-family neighborhoods whose that were changing in complexion as more single-family houses became rental, and rental with a number of, frankly, students living in them, and thus changing the complexion of both single-family neighborhoods as well as neighborhood schools and so on and so forth. This was disputed at that time by the Landlord Association here, suing the city, taking us to the Supreme Court. And at the Supreme Court, the city of Ames won the case. So
you're saying that the zoning regulations that restricted those houses in those neighborhoods to three unrelated people, but no more, that ordinance was taken.
Was upheld by the Supreme Court.
Okay.
This year it seems to have a different stance that has been taken by the legislature. And you're right. I was down there Tuesday meeting with a variety of legislators as well as other interested parties. And one of our stances, there are many, but certainly one of them is that one size doesn't fit all. And in university communities, ordinances that are concerning single or low density neighborhoods are quite different from what they would be in other communities. We met with representatives from Iowa City, from Cedar Falls, from Ames. I believe there was one person from Des Moines that was there. But those are the primary areas that are concerned. Now, I understand if you're a representative from Boone, it's an ordinance like this would be quite a different ball game. However, we also look upon it as a home rule, local option issue, so that ordinances that are particular to the makeup of communities like Ames can indeed be different from ordinances that are passed locally by communities like Boone or any place else that we name. So I think that was our stance.
What does home rule mean?
Home rule means that laws that are not superseded by the state level can be dealt with on the local level. There are certainly issues that we cannot override that are state laws or Supreme Court decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Laws that are codes that are not developed by the state, then local governments do have the opportunity to make those decisions locally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you, Mayor Campbell. And you will stay around and listen to what Chip Baltimore has to say, and then we'll give you ample time to comment on that. Here is my interview with Iowa House Representative Chip Baltimore, the author of House Bill 9. I'm here with Chip Baltimore, a representative from Boone in the Iowa House. And Chip, you recently introduced some legislation that would affect the occupancy standards for rental housing across the state. Could you describe exactly what the bill would do?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a number of cities around the state that have decided to limit the number of people that can live in a rental property based upon whether or not they're related to each other. And the city of Ames is one of those, and it's had that ordinance on the books for a number of years. And this piece of legislation would simply bring city ordinances in line with the Iowa Civil Rights Code that says that landlords cannot discriminate on the basis of family status. So landlords cannot refuse to rent to somebody based upon whether or not they are married to each other or related to each other. And likewise, this piece of legislation would say that cities cannot pass ordinances that would limit the number of people that can live in a rental property based upon whether or not they are related to each other. What we've seen is that cities have attempted to use this related person status to control problems in residential neighborhoods from everything from, you know, loud parties at homes to too much trash in the yards, to too many cars on the streets, to too many, you know, government services being utilized by a rental property or things like that. And And most cities already have ordinances dealing with all of those issues. They have noise ordinances. They have off-street parking ordinances. They've got nuisance ordinances that they can use to deal with trash that's around the property, or if the yard is not mowed frequently enough. Those ordinances exist, but what they found, and this is particularly true in college towns, is if they take a home and say no more than two or three unrelated people can live there, then it limits the number of college kids that can live in one of those properties, and somehow they think that that's a more effective way of controlling the other issues that are truly the problems with properties, which are noise, parties, garbage, parking, that sort of thing.
I've also heard of this kind of legislation being used to discriminate against, for instance, immigrants, families that are doubling up because of poverty.
Well, the ordinances could be used that way. And, quite frankly, before the Varnum decision by the Iowa Supreme Court that legalized same-sex marriage, same-sex couples could not be technically related to each other, and these ordinances could have been used to discriminate against them and keep them from living in a home together with a couple and their respective children, perhaps, or however many people they may have in there. And really, my biggest concern, though, is that there's no logical relationship between the relationships, family relationships of people living in a home and the problems that are associated with them. I've known five or six brothers over my years that have frequently enjoyed loud parties and that sort of thing. And the fact that they're related to each other, they could live in a home. But by the same token, I've known four or five college professors that might decide to live together, and they don't cause any problems whatsoever, even though they're not related to each other. So there's no logical, rationale or relationship between whether or not citizens are related to each other to some degree and the problems that the cities are trying to solve.
Did you draft this legislation yourself?
With the assistance of the Legislative Services Agency, I brought this bill forward originally back in 2011, filed it again in 2013, and now here we are in 2015. So this is the third General Assembly that I've brought this piece of legislation forward, and we're getting some support for that increasingly. This year it passed the House Judiciary Committee by a vote of 19-2, so it was wildly bipartisan. And I think that the two no votes were Republicans, so I think we had all or maybe all but one of the Democrats supportive of it, as well as the vast majority of Republicans, which I think bodes well for its chances after it passes the Iowa House in the democratically controlled Senate.
What other cities in Iowa do you know of that have these ordinances?
I know the city of Ames does. Cedar Falls does. In fact, that's probably something that has this piece of legislation getting more attention now than it has in the past. Cedar Falls recently was considering an ordinance that would have limited rentals to as few as two unrelated people. It was an overreach. And I think that's gotten a lot of attention in the legislature.
What has made you through these years pursue this legislation? What has really driven your interest in it?
Well, I've known of instances where you'll have a four-bedroom home with three bathrooms and off-street parking for four or six cars. That landlords have indicated they are not able to rent to four people, even though there's plenty of room in the home that they can't rent because of one of these ordinances. As chair of the House Judiciary Committee, I take a look at issues and ordinances and laws that people bring to me that just don't make any sense. And if they don't make any sense, then, you know, it's imperative upon the legislature to do something to fix them. And really, with landlords are put in a horrible position by these ordinances because the Iowa Civil Rights Code prohibits them from discriminating on the basis of family status. Yet in order to comply with these ordinances, the landlords in their rental applications have to get relationship information from the prospective tenants. And so then if the landlord decides to not rent to someone, the possible implication is that he did it because they were asking these very sensitive questions about, are you related to each other? You know, how are you related to each other? Within what degree of family are you? And, you know, those are questions that, you know, quite honestly, some people take offense to answering, especially when they're just trying to find a place to live and they're upstanding citizens. And then to be denied for whatever the possible reason, knowing that it's illegal under the Iowa Civil Rights Code for a landlord to make decisions based upon those questions, what kind of position does that put a landlord in? And that's why I think, you know, you're putting these landlords in impossible positions where it appears as if they may be violating the Iowa Civil Rights Code, but they're merely asking it to try to accommodate or satisfy what I consider to be mass discrimination by a city. So I just think it's time, the time has come to rectify the situation. Let cities go back to regulating the problems based upon logically related ordinances, and let's get the family status out of the rental code.
Thank you very much, Chip Baltimore.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to seeing where this particular legislation goes.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was Chip Baltimore, Iowa representative, who put forward House Study Bill 25, which would eliminate parts of the AIM zoning code that restrict houses in certain zones to no more than 3 unrelated people.
Mayor Ann Campbell has been speaking against this bill, and she is here with us today at KHOI. Mayor Campbell, would you comment on the interview you just heard?
Well, yes, I'd be very happy to. And again, I would emphasize that one of the reasons for home rule is that there's no one community that is like another community. And I do think that university communities are indeed unique in terms of the issues of ownership in subjects like this. Now, it is very interesting, having spent a better part of Tuesday at the legislature meeting with both our Iowa League of Cities representatives as well as representatives from leadership in the Senate and other communities. I think this year in particular, there seems to be a good deal of misunderstanding going on about this particular piece of legislation and about what laws are on the books in particular cities now. I refer specifically to what Mr. Baltimore referenced in the recent Cedar Falls legislation or the new code that has been passed there. And I was meeting with Cedar Falls representatives on Tuesday, and in fact, what has come out in the vernacular has been that they've blanketly limited to 2 unrelated people. In fact, that is not the case. The Cedar Falls legislation is, in truth, much more complex than that of Ames, but also much broader in leniency, if you will. They have based theirs on the rental code, and in terms of the very kinds of things that Mr. Baltimore is referring to, in other words, they're looking at the size of house, the size of parking, square footage, distance from neighbors, and so on, and thus it is escalating. It can go any place, my understanding is, from 2 unrelated people up to 5. And I have found in speaking again with some Senate leadership down there that that was not something that was understood. And frankly, it was not understood by us when we went down. We had simply heard, oh, Cedar Falls has limited this to two unrelated people. So that's one of the things that I would point out.
Mayor Campbell, the Mr. Hamilton made some remarks that kind of Mr. Baltimore made some comments that jumped out at me. He said there is no logical rationale for the limit, and that this doesn't make any sense. Can you just summarize what the rationale really is for the city to have this?
Well, I believe my interpretation of what Mr. Baltimore said was that he was saying there was no rationale in terms of if I have a house that has X number of bedrooms, I ought to put Y number of people in it. And certainly the case can be made that if I have a three-bedroom house, I can have a family that has four children and live in that house. Mr. Baltimore has personal experience with this, I know, with partners having been involved in landlord ownership in Ames for a house such as this. And I'm sure that I'm sure it would on him have an impact on his interest in this particular legislation. The difference, I believe, in a family that would be the size of your family or mine versus, frankly, student rental is the kind of activities within the household, the number of cars, the involvement in neighborhood, and so on. So I think that the recognition is that we do have low-density residential zones for single-family purposes. They have become almost dormitory purposes as university size has changed, housing circumstances have changed. Families buy houses for their children, finding it economically advantageous. But it has done a good deal to change the complexion of many neighborhoods that we've seen here in Ames and other university communities are seeing as well.
Well, following up on that, would you comment on Chip Baltimore's argument that the law should be used to fight nuisances on their own terms? So, in other words, fight noise with noise ordinances, fight trash with trash ordinances, and not make assumptions about types of households and what they are or are not likely to do.
I'd be very happy to follow up on that. And there's certainly a very valid issue there. However, I live in a neighborhood like this. I witness it every day, or particularly every weekend. And I think one of the things that we keep in mind also is looking at a community as a whole, where we are certainly very much embracing the fact that we are a university community. Ames would not be what it is without Iowa State University and without the students that we have. That being said, there's no secret about the fact that living interests, entertaining interests are different when you are 18 from what they are when you are 52. And one of the things that we work very hard on in the community of Ames, and you talk about policing, our police have worked very hard to be an embracing community. However, that being said, I don't believe we want to be in a community where every time there is a house next door that has a party with uninvited people that come 100, and I'm not exaggerating, 100, 200 at a time, do we want the police to come in and have that kind of confrontation? I don't believe that is the kind of community that any of us want to have, and particularly as we look at policing issues around the country at this point, I think that that is not the kind of control that we want to have. The same thing has been said for just get the city inspectors in there. Well, I can tell you for a fact that it's very difficult for city inspectors to come into a house like this. If we have three unrelated people, but you're the fourth, we just keep your name off the lease. So it's not so easy just to say, we've got laws, let's come in and enforce them. Ideally, it would be nice to, but the strong arm of city government, I think, is not something that we want in terms of the kind of community that we want to have.
You mentioned Chip Baltimore's association with the landlord interest. Mm-hmm. But he's couching this legislation in terms of discrimination and civil rights.
That's right.
Referring to Chapter 216 of the Iowa Code, which is what encompasses the Iowa Civil Rights Act enacted in 1965. And this description of no discrimination based on familial status also contains a clause about race, ethnicity, and so forth. It's kind of the fair housing clause of Iowa law. How do you respond to his charge of discrimination?
Well, it's my understanding that as his using the Civil Rights Act is looking at familial status. I have conferred both with our state legal counsel as well as our local legal counsel on interpretation of the Civil Rights Act. I don't pretend to be a legal authority myself. But what I am told by conferring with legal counsel is the familial status aspect of the Civil Rights Act is a very restrictive one. It is not restrictive in the interpretation that we believe that Mr. Baltimore has, but it is restrictive in terms of saying that if I'm a mother with children or if I'm pregnant, that those are the kinds of things that are included in the limitations or the definition, I should say, of the familial status here. So our legal counsel would indicate to us that this is not an accurate interpretation. That being said, I am aware that in other communities, which again is why I think this needs to be a home rule kind of things, where the immigrant issue that you brought up is considered, is that familial status in some ethnic communities has a perhaps a more fluid interpretation than what we are using.
Mm-hmm. So you think it's a stretch of civil rights law to categorize students or young people as a protected class, and that we should not discriminate against students and young people because they're likely to be noisy and gregarious?
Well, it's not what I think. It's what our interpretation of the law is.
Representative Baltimore described how landlords have to ask sensitive questions of their tenants. How do you respond to that?
I've never heard that before.
What is the definition of family in the Ames Municipal Code? I'm curious. I've heard that some families are doubling up to make ends meet. Is that illegal according to Ames zoning restrictions if that happened in a low density residential?
Well, three unrelated people means that the three of us sitting here would be the max. Now, we certainly have indeed you can go and find concerns about this if two families live together and so on and so forth. I frankly have not heard examples or very rare examples of this. You know, this is frankly becomes enforced by being reported. We don't have inspectors and police that go door to door to see who's living in your house or mine. This becomes an ability that we have when there are issues that are getting out of hand. And it came very frankly because there have been issues that have gotten out of hand, and neighborhoods already have changed dramatically and continue to.
Many have pointed out that Ames has had a shortage of affordable rental housing. Mm-hmm. Even the Renters Association of Ames has argued that this is a great concern, although they're benefiting from it because, of course, the prices go up when the housing is scarce. Do you see any relationship between this legislation and that issue?
No. I see that we have dealt with this. We are also looking at just last week at the City Council looking at recognizing the need for affordable housing. We have in Ames the benefit of community development block grants and a variety of other programs. Last Tuesday, an effort was taken by the City Council to move ahead in getting requests for proposal for development of low and moderate income rental building. Specifically, I'm talking about the land that is just north of Ames City Hall, where Ames Community Preschool happened to be. So I guess my concern is that, yes, we're very concerned about low and moderate income housing here. However, I think that we also have to look at the fact that one of the things that has happened to low and moderate income housing in Ames for the kinds of organizations that you belong to and are supporting has been that we are also a university community. So in many neighborhoods, including mine, it is very easy to see the least expensive houses on the neighborhoods are being rented or bought not by the people that your organizations are concerned about, but by families of students who then in turn have any number of students living in them for mercy knows whatever rental prices there may or may not be. So I look upon, again, coming back to home rule, that one of the issues of affordable housing in Ames is complicated by the fact that, quote, affordable housing becomes student housing, and thus that has a market effect on other kinds of housing that your organizations are concerned about.
Mayor Campbell, could you, for those of us who don't actually know which of the neighborhoods are that we're talking about, can you give us a general sense of what actually the zoning areas are that this would apply to?
It applies to all low-density residential.
And low-density
residential means single-family houses. So it would apply from anything from far north Ames to those immediately in the area of the university. Needless to say, areas that are in some proximity to the university, which are low-density residential, are feeling more of the impact, but I think it's fair to say that all neighborhoods of low density residential are feeling the impact of this. It perhaps, if you will, is creeping. But no, zoning means you drive around Ames, walk around Ames, bike around Ames, and anything that is obviously a low density residential, in other words, single family, in other words, independent houses, are under this umbrella.
And what percentage, I mean, I know that's maybe too precise, but generally is like half of Ames under the low density or a quarter or
I don't have that, and if I said it, it'd probably be wrong.
But it's a significant part of the town?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think just a flyover view would tell you that we've got low density, we've got medium density, and we've got high density. Mm-hmm. High density, very obviously, is high-rise apartment buildings and so on. But so, I think if you look at any of the neighborhoods, well, take it this way. Look at any of the neighborhoods that have had elementary schools.
Mm-hmm.
And those schools historically were built in low-density residential neighborhoods so that Johnny could walk to school. So if this is not a percentage or an accurate description, but as you're looking at the changes in demographics in low-density neighborhoods, looking at the schools can certainly be one of the indicators.
Mm-hmm. And what I hear in what you're saying is that in a college town or a university town like Ames, the complexity of competing interests is increased because of this very particular orientation of a town that requires a lot of housing, and it just raises the issues, which in some ways what I'm hearing, you're arguing for a quality of life issue that becomes involved in the mix as well.
Well, thank you. Yes, indeed, that's what we have been arguing for. And again, as we look at, take the history of Iowa State University, when historically the vast portion of students lived in residential housing or in the Greek system, that's no longer the case. There are a variety of other factors that go into this. Mm-hmm. Interest rates right now impact that, whereas daddy can buy a house that is with a reasonable interest rate for Johnny while there's 4 years in college, or the same thing can happen for investors. So it's a very complex situation.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming in and talking it through with us, and I think we're going to have to leave it at that for now.
Yes, thank you, Anne, for joining us. We appreciate it. It's a pleasure to see you.
Thank you.
That was our own Paul Hertz playing Bach on a bass trombone, a piece that was written for cello and commissioned by Valerie Williams, of the artistic director of Commotion Dance Theater, for her new production. Bach Had 20 Children, which will be presented March 6th and 7th at Ames City Auditorium. We have Valerie with us this morning.
Good morning.
Hi. And so... that was an interesting piece. I was wondering what the bodies were doing on stage while that piece was playing, or in your mind as that was playing.
That's a solo that's performed by one of our men, one of the men performers of the Bach Had 20 Children cast. We have quite a large cast for this production. The professional cast, the professional dancers of Commotion Dance Theater, are joined by a number of local dancers, local amateur dancers. So this is one of our pro-am concerts. It's very, very fun.
And you have local musicians like Paul contributing the score.
So all of the music is by Bach, and it's interpreted in different ways. And, you know, we listen to Bach all the time. And there are so many different interpretations, which is one of the reasons that his music has lasted through the centuries. You know, this is called Bach Had 20 Children because he did have 20 children from his loins. Given that time, not all of those children lived to adulthood or even really into childhood. But with two wives, he had lots of kids. But he also has these artistic children. So... I've been listening all my life to groups like the Swingle Singers and Benny Goodman and, you know, I mean, different people who take Bach's music and interpret it in their own genre, not just personal way, but also, you know, like we can say, oh, that's jazz or that's classical or that's synthetic. And those different ways of interpreting Bach always make me think about, you know, as a modern dancer, how do we interpret? In this case, I was really interested in my interpretation of somebody else's interpretation of Bach's music. So I am not working from a score. I'm not working from a structure or a story or a narrative. I'm working really specifically from how does that music sound to me? How does it make me feel? How do I express myself in movement terms inspired by the sound that I'm hearing? So it's not just Bach's music. It's somebody else's interpretation of Bach's music. Listening to the Kayser Trio, or the Kayser family jazz, I should say, because it's Ed Kayser Sr. and Ed Kayser Jr. and their son Nick.
This is a local group.
Yes, this is the Kayser Jazz. And listening to them play the French Overture is just really cool. What they do with an invention or quia respectit, or what they, you know, how they work with those rhythms and how they swing it sometimes and how they improvise from it. Because Bach was a big improviser. He was known to have started, you know, start a theme on the piano and then go for a really long time with variations on that and improvising around that theme. So we'll not be improvising on the stage. The dances are set and choreographed, but they come from that same
impulse.
Impulse, yes.
Yeah, I can see that. I can hear that. I hear ya. Okay, well, again, those performances will be March 6th and 7th at Ames City Auditorium. What time?
At 7:30 p.m., both performances on Friday night and Saturday night, March 6th and 7th.
Thank you. Valerie Williams, Artistic Director of Commotion Dance Theater. And now we have Belinda Merritt.
Hello, this is Belinda Merritt, and I have the live music for February 27th through March 5th. On Friday, February 27th, POW will be at The Bar, 823 Wheeler Street, from 9 o'clock p.m. until 1 o'clock a.m. Damon Dotson will be at Westtown Pub, 4518 Mortensen Road. On Saturday, February 28th, Kalina Calcutta will be at Café Milo, 4800 Mortensen Road, at 6:30 p.m. Chris Koza in Real Time with Extravision will be at The Treehouse, 3725 Woodland, at 8 o'clock p.m. Tickets are available at eventbrite.com. Last in Line will be at The Bar from 9 o'clock p.m. until 1 o'clock a.m. Around the Atom will be at Crossroads, 1790 Giddings, Cali, from 9 o'clock p.m. until 1 o'clock a.m. Work will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. The Burnin' Sensations will be at the Southside Club, 1215 South Story Street, Boone. On Thursday, March 5th, Anna Libra will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. That's all I have for this week. Thank you.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg and Greta Anderson. We spoke today with Melissa Spencer from Story County Emergency Management about the new mass alert system for emergencies, Iowa House Representative Chip Baltimore and Mayor Ann Campbell about Mr. Baltimore was proposing that would affect Ames zoning limits, residential occupancy in various areas of the town. Mayor Ann Campbell joined us to comment as well about this, and Valerie Williams was here to talk about Commotion. And thank you, Belinda, as always, for keeping us informed about live music.
Local Talk was engineered by Becca Brown. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And you will find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. Thank you, Ron. KHOI is now streaming live online at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, where you can also find an archive of all of our shows. Please remember that you, as the listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations will make it help to make it all possible, will and do make it possible. Thank you for listening.
See you on the radio.